You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Hey everybody, it's a special episode of Infestation. Now, you may notice that Sundance just kind of came and went, and I don't know, it seemed like it kind of didn't completely underwhelm, but maybe didn't set the world on fire, other than that giant acquisition for that Andy Samberg movie, which I'll bring up in just a sec. But we do actually have someone here, not directly in our normal crew, but a guest and a very good friend of mine who did see some of the movies at Sundance and wants to talk about them. Please welcome Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
Hey, how you doing? Long time no see.
I know, right? It's been a while.
Yeah. For people who don't know, Melissa is a very dear friend of mine from back in my days at BYU. She was also studying film with me. She also married one of my friends, Thomas, and they are currently... You guys are living in California right now, right?
Yes, we're currently in California, so just doing the whole film business here.
Oh, fun. but yeah, anything else you want to talk about yourself? Like what you do, like your profession and that stuff?
Yes. So I'm mostly a writer-director. I've done a couple of short indie films here and there. We have currently a project in post that we are hoping to get into the film festival circuit. So we're kind of having some fun there. But my husband, Thomas, as you've mentioned, we both met in film school. We also know Justin from film school. and Thomas, his specialty is producing. So he recently graduated with a master's in production, and now he's just doing a whole lot of projects from commercials to feature films.
Yeah, which from what I've heard also is that he is doing a little bit of teaching over at Chapman right now, correct?
Yes, he was doing a temp job with the whole TV pilot class there. So.
Oh, nice. Oh man, TV pilots are so fun to work with. I did a course at BYU that was simulating a writer's room for a television show, and that was some of the most fun I ever had working at a class. You know, it's just, it was a complete failure, but it was still super fun.
Yeah, I mean, TV is, you know, the TV is growing these days. And lots of young people want to get their hands on that. So, and he's been really kind of guiding that process.
Sweet. But in the meantime, there is movies to talk about. And yes, movies are still being made. They're still successful, even with TV on the horizon.
Yes, and people still go to the theater, so...
Yes, and sometimes they go to film festivals like Sundance. Now, interesting thing, like, I feel like, I don't know if you agree with me, that Sundance has lost a little clout over the years just because a lot of their high-profile purchases have kind of been bombing lately.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually talking that with Thomas yesterday. So he was saying that despite, you know, Sundance having better quality programming this year, I mean, he fears that, you know, with the whole marketing behind it or like commercialism, that it might not pick up highly with like, for example, the Oscars, or because like with Ironbark, for example, one of the films that I watched, it was a very solid film overall, but he thinks that, you know, even though Benedict Cumberbatch might have had a very strong performance then, that the Academy just not might pick up on it. And that's what's kind of been happening over the years with Sundance.
Yeah, because I know a few films are still struggling to get acquisition as even now, right? Like, what, it's been like 5 days since the festival ended?
Yeah. And definitely, like, a lot of films still need a home in terms of distribution. But, I mean...
It sounds like an adoption thing. Just like, please find a home for these poor films.
Pretty much, it does feel that way. I mean, but like you mentioned, you know, Palm Springs, which was a big, I guess there was a big war there with the bidding. Amazon finally got some rights to it. But that was pretty much one of the major ones that people were fighting for this year. I didn't hear any major other fights for some movies, you know? Other films may have had, like, in terms of, like, buzzing, they had a lot of buzz on social media, like Zola, for example, which was basically based off a Reddit thread.
That crazy film.
Yeah, it was I mean, I didn't see it, but from the people that told me about it, I mean, there was a lot of hype going on with that one. But other than that, like, you don't hear the major bidding wars of Sundance's past, you know? I mean, that was pretty much the only film that, like, Palm Springs, that people were fighting about, you know?
Yeah. No, because I know Netflix came in with a bunch of their own pre-made stuff ready to, just show at Sundance, not even for exhibition or purchasing. They did pick up three other films, including that film, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Not Virgin, but Version. I didn't slur that one. But, which I did hear some good deals about that one. And apparently, they didn't release the actual sum they paid, but somewhere they said the mid to high seven figures, which is admirable. You know, pretty good deal there. Then Hulu was the biggest one because, yeah, they acquired Palm Springs. Now, initial reports said they, like, beat out the previous record by, like, 60 cents with, like, $17.5 million. But new rumors suggest that it may have been even higher than that in, like, $22 million purchase.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's definitely been, with Netflix at least, I mean, they had such a huge presence there at Sundance, but they were already, like, acquiring the films anyway. They weren't going there to buy films. They were going there to just release. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I am glad, though, that the one that you talked about, Ironbark, got picked up by Lionsgate for also mid-seven-figure range. So that one will actually get proper theatrical distribution and care from a major studio in that situation.
Yeah, no, and I was already, like, thinking that it would be doing that just because it was also under the premieres category, and usually those films, they go on to be theatrical releases and things like that. But with everybody else, you'd never know how it's going to go, you know, because premieres, you know, they always highlight the fact that they have these A-listers attached to it. And like Benedict Cumberbatch, who is very solid nowadays with his whole marketability, being part of Marvel and all, so... Sherlock, of course, but just the fact that I feel like this is a role that really highlights his range, I think people will start really noticing it even more.
Well, why don't we start with that one then? We're going to talk about this film, Ironbark. So this one, like you said, is starring Benedict Cumberbatch as a character named Greville Wynn. Now, I only know so much as what I've looked up in the Wikipedia article so far, but what's the synopsis here about who Greville Wynn is and what the story is about for the film?
Yeah, so it starts out with this character, Greville Wynn, and basically he's a salesman, but he's not just any salesman. What happens is he is recruited by the CIA and MI6, as part of a secret operative that wants to get a hold of some files from the Russians in order to stop the further damaging of the war. This is during the Cold War. And so they're trying to stop the whole Cuban Missile Crisis from stepping over, you know, from actually being a bigger crisis than it was. So, with that said, Benedict Cumberbatch's performance as the salesman starts out with him kind of being, you know, very conservative, very, I guess, not optimistic about what's going on with the situation here that he's being placed. He's kind of like this underdog, this puppy that they take in, and they are hoping that he, like, kind of goes off into the wilderness to complete his mission, even though he is not, technically, he has never had spy training or anything before. So it's kind of a cool underdog story of how a person can be placed in a certain situation, but when they see that it's important for them to complete the mission or the task that is at hand, that they can really reach their true potential. And so it was a really cool, interesting take in the human experience that way. And he also meets Alexander Pavosky, who's played by this Georgian actor. I'll probably say his
name. Oh, wait, you mean like from the country of Georgia?
Yeah, but in the movie, he plays a Russian. Because what's happening is Alexander Pavosky, he is considered by the Russians to be a major traitor. But it's because he helped the Westerners with these files, you know? And so Russians now, they don't even want to mention this guy's name, you know? Oh, yeah. Like, otherwise you'll land in jail or something. And so these guys couldn't even film in Russia to begin with. And they couldn't even hire Russian actors to be part of this movie. So they hired a guy from Georgia. His name is Merab Ninitse. I probably will say that completely wrong.
Oh yeah, I see my here. So, you said he was that name, but did they rename him for the film? Because it says Oleg as his credited name.
So Oleg was just part of the. I guess it was like the nickname is what they had, but
his code name was Ironbark in the film, right?
Yes. So they had different names for him, but his last name, Probovsky, like they all knew him throughout Russia by that name. It was his official government name, you know?
Okay.
Basically he and Greville develop a strong friendship when they were placed in the situation of trying to get these documents. And I guess when you see that as an audience, you think to yourself, these are men that are coming from different countries, different habits and cultures and things, but they're starting to see themselves as equals. And I think it was really such a cool thing. Even with the cinematography, you get the sense that they're being filmed as equals within the same frame, because Benedict Cumberbatch in real life, he's a very tall guy. And yeah, the actor, the Georgian actor, he's actually pretty short in real life because he was there at the screening at the Q&A. And I was like, well, in frame, they actually seem like they're pretty much the same height. So I thought it was kind of cool that they try to make that a thing in the cinematography.
Nice, because I know that this has a decent production behind it. Like, Sean Bobbitt shot the film, who also shot 12 Years a Slave. I mean, would you say that the production design overall was pretty well done and the overall craft of the film?
Yeah, no, I think it was. I mean, they definitely played with muted colors a lot. They kind of went towards more cooler towards the end. I feel like in terms of like the production design, they fit well. Mostly this was filmed in Prague, but then they made it seem like it was part of Russia. They genuinely made everything in terms of like how the director wanted this shot. He didn't want like these like big landscapes or these big wide type shots of the scenery itself. He just kind of wanted a little more constraints in terms of like the buildings and like the space that they were in indoors. So,
yeah. Well, so it's interesting too, you mentioned the director, because the director here is Dominic Cook, who actually is predominantly a theater director. He did a lot of stuff for the British theater, especially a very acclaimed production of The Crucible back in 2006, where he won the Olivier Award for director, and then for the play Clyburn Park, which was a huge hit back in the day as well. But before this, he actually did one other film, which was called On Chesil Beach, which I didn't get a chance to see, even though I had an offer to review it back in the day. But that was with Saoirse Ronan, adaptation of a classic book. So this is his first big, you know, follow-up film to this kind of such. And it's interesting to see how people would receive this one as a sophomore film. But it seems like, on the whole, from what I'm seeing, people seem to be more kind to this than not, on the whole, from that kind of such.
Yeah, I mean, there was from what I experienced, there was a very positive reception to this film. Towards the end, I mean, you got two standing ovations.
Well, I mean, film festivals, they do that all the time, to be fair.
But I feel like even though I've watched a couple of films at Sundance, I didn't get the reactions and the emotions of people as they watched this movie. We definitely got a lot of bit of awes and even tears. I mean, I've people around me were sobbing. So there were definitely more emotions felt as I watched this than any other film that I watched throughout Sundance.
Well, interesting. I mean, because I know it's currently sitting at 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, which seems all right so far. But I mean, that's only after so many reviews from the festival, to be fair. So, other than that, though, I noticed that Rachel Brosnahan and Jesse Buckley are in the cast, which, I mean, I love Rachel Brosnahan from Mrs. Maisel. That's her big show that she does. How would you say the rest of those people in the cast are?
Oh, well, she was wonderful. I mean, she played the CIA agent that approaches the salesman guy, and I thought she was really good at her performance. It's kind of like, at first, when you see her, it's kind of hard not to, see her as something other than Mrs. Maisel, you know? She does so well as Mrs. Maisel, and, I mean, that's a very iconic role that she's taken on. But this one, I feel like, in and of its own, she really brings a different vibe and tone to it. It's more of a kind of like on the go, I'm part of the boys club, I'm the only girl here, but you know what, I don't care. So kind of going along with her, in a way it's similar to Mrs. Maisel, but I feel like she's more of a less feminine character here.
Okay. And then Jesse Buckley also plays Sheila Wynn. What about her?
Oh, she did great. I mean, she was from Chernobyl. I loved her character in Chernobyl, actually.
Oh, wait. She was, right. She was one of the other side characters in that one, right?
Yeah. I believe she was the wife of the ailing men.
At the hospital. She was really good in that. Yeah,
and so when I saw her in Chernobyl, I thought, well, what is she going to do next? Because she was really wonderful there, and this is what she did next.
Okay, but, and she's also going to be in the next season of Fargo as well.
Oh, so yeah.
She's moving on up.
Oh, yeah. No, she's definitely getting up there, and I feel like with this performance, she was amazing in terms of how she was able to... I mean, this movie has so many different themes. I mean, love, friendship, everything else. But she really brings out the family theme in this because she is the wife of Greville. But Greville, we noticed as she was talking to him that once he starts to go to Moscow a lot for his missions, but she doesn't know anything about them, that there was a past between them in terms of how he had an affair. Not a lot of details were shown about what the affair was or anything, but she started to mistrust him and started to play off the wife that mistrusts. And towards the end, it comes full circle because you could really sense that she was very, guilty for the fact that she found out that he wasn't doing any of that in Moscow, that he was doing something bigger than what he could ever imagine, you know? And then she started to feel this sense of, I guess, empowerment towards the fact that she should really hold on to her husband and be, like, treating him like a precious thing that she... has to hold on to. So I feel like she did really well in terms of like the range that was played out there.
Awesome. So before we move on, like, is there any notable like flaws or things that you would have improved upon that you thought about for the film? Or,
well, I felt the film overall was good, but the fact that they were in towards the middle of it, they kind of lagged a bit for the same. Like, there was always this back and forth of we're still doing more missions and we're still doing this, and I feel like it could have been more condensed because we got the picture of what they were doing.
Yeah, because it's just shy of 2 hours long, so.
Yeah, and so I feel like it could have been condensed just a bit in terms of the middle, but other than that, this was a really In my opinion, it was a very nice look into the Cold War. It showed more of a humanistic touch and with the different people involved.
Okay. Well, so I guess if you want to give like just an arbitrary rating, we have a system here how we do it where we do like a something out of something, you know, rating. So we'll do like 4 out of 5 mustaches on Benedict Cumberbatch or something like that. Like if you had to give like an arbitrary score to this, what would you say?
I would give this a 4.5 mustache. For
sure. Okay, yeah, I'm just saying, you can insert whatever you want with that. I just said mustache, just something funny. But
I mean, he did have a mustache in the film, so there you go.
Well, there you go. I actually haven't seen any trailers for this, so I didn't know if he had a mustache or not. Fair enough. So why don't we change lanes here for something fairly different. Now, along with Sundance, there's also Slam Dance that happens during this time, which, for the people who don't know, just quickly, how would you explain what Slam Dance is?
Well, I feel like Slam Dance is a film festival by filmmakers for filmmakers. I mean, why do I know this? Because I used to work for them, for one. I was part of Slam Dance TV. For a time.
No way.
Yeah, and so they would really emphasize on that. And I mean, that was like when I started working with them, it was my first time at this film festival. And it's like definitely a different vibe than Sundance. They're more on the low key, smaller auditoriums,
they do a lot more documentaries, indie films, foreign films, kind of stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and so this is more the films that you get to watch, more hands-on, there's like more of a pure voice to them, instead of trying to like fit a mold of like, kind of like most of, not, I'm not saying all Sundance films are this way, but...
No, I get you.
A good number of them would be like... heading towards commercial type films, you know, especially the premiere category of Sundance. So
no, fair enough. And I mean, I actually reviewed a Slam Dance film last year, Cat Sticks. If you heard about that one.
Oh yeah, I've heard the name. I haven't had the chance to watch it. So
oh, it's very very good. Really good Indian film. Oh, actually no, sorry, from Calcutta specifically. But let's talk about this film that you saw for Slam Dance called Maxima. So this is a documentary, and just very quickly, how would you explain like the gist of this plot here?
Well, Maxima starts out with the protagonist here. She is an indigenous lady who lives kind of in the outskirts of like the Andes. Mm-hmm. What she's dealing with is something. It's definitely something real. The fact that her land, she's defending it to the very core from this major company. This company is called Newmont, and they're a U.S.-based company. And basically, they've taken over most of the land that she's surrounded by, except for her own, like her home and the crops that she has. So this is a film that just centers around the battle between her and this major multi-million gold mining company. And the company, they do all sorts of illegal tactics to intimidate her. They use violence. They use intimidation by like killing her crops. They even killed her dog. Like, it's a very...
Not the dog!
Like, it's a very intense doc. I mean, because you see, like, how these people, like, they will stop at nothing to get this lady out. And it's not even their land. It's her land. She was there. She was there first. Okay. But you definitely get to see a glimpse of her life. You see the charisma of this lady, you fall in love with her, and just the fact that she's so determined to not back down, no matter what they've done to her, or even like buying the police government to go get law enforcement to hit her, and all this other stuff. You also see the corruption that is happening, and not just in Peru, but in the government in general, in Latin America, and possibly in different areas of the world. And so the fact is here that this documentary, I feel like, has definitely caught a lot of people in terms of awareness. Even for me, I was not aware of this lady. And even though I'm from Peru, but I feel that the filmmakers found it in themselves to really get her story out there.
Okay, so, yeah, it's interesting to see this. So, the director here is Claudia Sparrow, who actually has only done one other feature film and a short film. The feature was called I Remember You, which I don't know anything about, and it got reviewed decently back in the day. And then before that, she did visual effect work and some smaller films, too. And another short film. But this is her big, you know, her newest big feature in a while. And it seems, you know, I haven't really heard much about it. But then again, Slam Dance doesn't really get a lot of promotion from a lot of people. But there are 10 reviews on IMDb that give it a 9 or a 10, I guess. So are you going to be one of those contributing to that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would give it a 9. I mean, it's pretty solid. I rarely give 10s to films. I feel like
I'm the same way.
Yeah, I feel like everything about it was great. The editing was a little bit long in parts. I think it
so when you say that, like, you mean like the shots or that kind of stuff? Because the movie's only an hour and a half, so.
No, just the fact that there were ideas that we already got from one place, and then it was brought on again in a different place, and I feel like, okay, I think we get the gist that, she, you know, she's been dealing with these things, and we know exactly what they are, but then okay. It's like, kind of like, oh, we're going back to all the crops, you know, or other things, and I feel
in
like...
In case you missed what we were talking about, here it is again.
Yeah, but I feel like they could have touched on, you know, because I felt the most interesting part of this was the fact that they were mentioning the area that she was in, because this company not only was affecting her, but was also affecting the community around her with the fact that they were dumping mercury into the water. And I wanted to know more about that, because they said that a lot of the people there died of stomach cancer. And it was actually... It also touched home for me, because my great grandparents are from that area, and they both died from stomach cancer. So that was kind of a very interesting take, because I never would imagine to connect one with the other, you know, and this documentary kind of did that for me.
So you felt a little bit of a personal connection with this because of that. So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
No, fair enough. So yeah, I mean, any last points before we move on? I mean, I guess it sounds like you're giving this a pretty big recommend then, huh?
Yeah, no, this, I feel, was a very solid one. I give it 9 llamas out of 10.
There are a lot of llamas down there.
Yeah, that is for sure, so.
All right. No, that sounds cool. I like hearing about these little gems and that stuff, because, I mean, I know, they'll probably not get major distribution for this, but if a few people see this who get affected by this, that's really good, you know?
I mean, yeah, they definitely encouraged after the movie to post on, like, social media, hashtags, all that, so I feel like they've been doing a good job in terms of, like, social awareness that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they did that for another documentary I saw at Sundance years ago, too. It was like a conflict with other gold mining and, you know, working operations in South America. But, I mean, I hadn't heard much about that film since, sadly. But sometimes they get the spread, so. Well, why don't we move on to this film, then, The Killing of Two Lovers. Now, I don't know much about this, but I see one of the names on this, and it makes me very curious. One of the lead actors here is Clayne Crawford. Are you familiar with this guy?
Yeah, well, I actually wasn't before this movie, but after this movie, I started to see that there were a lot of interested people in this actor, and I was like, oh, who is he? And then I look more into it. I mean, one of his first films was, he was part of the Walk to Remember cast, and if mm-hmm. any teenage girl back then knew that movie well enough, I mean, most of them did, you know, because A Walk to Remember was, everybody was oozing over Shane West and Mandy Moore, and he was, he played, in that movie, he played the kind of the rebellious teenager who makes fun of Mandy Moore's character. So I didn't put 2-2 together until after that movie, and people were like, apparently he's got a big social media following. and stuff.
Well, and also, he's got a bit of a back-and-forth reputation, because, I mean, he built his name in television for a lot. He was on Jericho for a while, CSI, he had a few little stunt there, same with 24. But his big break was that show Rectify that came out a while back.
Oh, yeah. And I guess he was also in Lethal Weapon, too, right?
Which, that's the controversial one, because apparently people just had a rough time working with Clayne Crawford, to the point that they killed him off in the show, because apparently he was working as a director and an actor for certain episodes, and there was an incident, a number of incidents, apparently, where people reported possible abuse situations, him taking advantage of some of the people involved, and then, like, an onset incident that injured Marlon Wayans on the show. I mean, not Marlon. Who's the other Wayans who was on that one? But anyway, so it was a very public situation where he got, you know, openly fired and killed off of the series on that one. So this feels like it's one of his little steps to kind of build some indie cred as an attempt to come back. Sorry, Damon Wayans was the one on Lethal Weapon. Okay. So I'm curious to see if this is something that can really help him or not. So I don't know much about this movie. Why don't you give a basic synopsis? What is the story of The Killing of Two Lovers?
So basically this is about Clayne Crawford's character is David. David is dealing with a very tough separation from his wife, Nikki, who is played by Sepideth Mulafi, and she's actually from the TV show. Oh, yeah. So she's actually from the L Word TV show.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they played the kind of this damaged married couple, and that now they're kind of at a crossroads where they want to start dating other people to kind of figure out their own relationship. But he doesn't actually feel as hopeless as his wife. He is hoping that maybe this time that they're given, that she would come around and that their family would be together. So he tries to do all these antics and all these things to try to make her feel that, you know, they're still a family. He wants to still be with her. But now he has to deal with the fact that she's actually been starting to see someone. And so the whole movie kind of takes a spin. You kind of get a sense that you think maybe this guy's gonna, because of the title, that there's gonna be some killing happening or something's gonna happen, but it's not the way that we think. It's definitely not that way. Things kind of unravel in a slightly different way than we think, and we have the kids that are played. Actually, the director Robert Michoen, he likes to put his family in his films, and so he has his kids, his three boys, play the kids in the movie, and then the grandpa in the movie is his own dad.
What a way to save on money by casting your own family in a film.
Oh, I know. Or, like, I guess he wants to just take off after Martin Scorsese, who puts his own family in
there. Fair enough. Because, Robert Michoen, I believe, he hasn't really done anything that people would really remember. He's mostly done documentary shorts, and he's done a couple movies, but mostly he mostly operates exclusively in short cinema categories. So I'm curious, like how do you feel that translates, or, you know, what works or doesn't work about that with his style in this film?
Well, he's very much in the realism spectrum of things. I feel like it's very much long takes. I feel like that's the beauty in this film, is the fact that he doesn't intrude with the camera on these characters. Okay. He definitely gives them their space to kind of explore the different challenges that they're dealing with. There's a really nice shot of the dad and the teenage daughter in the park, and he's taking the boys to kind of like show them this cool rocket toy that he just bought for all of them. And they are all taking turns to shoot up some rockets. And all this is happening in one shot and one take. And the dynamics that are playing out, and the daughter just throwing a fit and trying to throw the rocket out of frame and just leaving the frame because she's so frustrated at the situation that's been happening. Because, quote unquote, the situation has been ruining her life. So, yeah, it's definitely, you get a bunch of that throughout the film. And the boys, I don't know, they're just very talented boys. They're very young. For them to memorize big chunks of dialogue in one take. There's a scene where they're all in the truck and they're talking about their day at school and stuff, and the dynamics that they have with kind of like playful banter and stuff. That whole thing there, they're very talented boys. I mean, he does a good job directing the cast for sure.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, and again, this one hasn't been picked up yet for any distribution, probably because of the whole Clint Crawford situation. But, you know, it's amazing you talk about this being mostly long takes, because this movie's also really, really short, like an hour and 25 minutes for the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it doesn't really feel that way, to be honest. It doesn't feel like that it's that short as you're watching it. But mostly because I feel like the long takes kind of do that. And you kind of try to see the different details that are going on in this ring here and there.
Nice. Now, I know this film's getting about 67% Rotten Tomatoes, but that's only after 9 reviews. So it could change if more people start to see this film. But would you say, were there any notable like strengths or weaknesses one way or the other for this movie?
Well, I definitely think that the director has a very strong voice and style. I love the long takes. I love the fact that, well, this was all shot in Kenosha, I believe.
Wisconsin. There you go.
Well, no, not Kenosha. Sorry, it starts with a K. It's a very small town in Utah, actually.
Oh, in Utah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a totally different part of the country. Come on.
In the other extreme. But yes, still very both cold places. But I mean, that's the thing. We get the backdrop of kind of this like uninteresting, cold Utah, small town in Utah.
But is it Cairns, Utah? Because I mean, I see it's shot in Utah, but is it Cairns? Or?
It's something Let me see here.
It only says Utah on the IMDb page, unfortunately. So
Kenosha, yes, Kenosha.
Oh, I've never even heard of that place.
I've never knew of this place either, and I've been living in Utah for a while too. So
learn a new thing every day. There you go.
Yeah, and so you get the backdrop of a very uninteresting town, but then the situation itself is very interesting. So I think he just didn't want that to overpower the emotions that are being felt.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, like I say, like, do you feel like there's any like drawbacks with that or anything like that? Or,
well, the only drawback that I can think of with this film, I feel like the character of the boyfriend, Derek, he was portrayed as this nice guy, but we don't really get to see like what it is about him that, you know, gets Nikki to kind of change course in that sense. We didn't get really enough of him, I feel like.
Okay, so like you feel like it focused a lot on the family, but when they introduced this, it wasn't as developed kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, or it wasn't like a reason for us to feel like, oh, well, she could definitely change course right now. Yeah, it was kind of like not this like a very interesting character. I would say he like was just given very little screen time, and we didn't really get to see the dynamics between him and her.
Oh, fair enough. So then, I guess outside of that, what would you give this for arbitrary ratings then?
All right. Well, I would give this I would give this 8 snowballs out of 10. So.
Ooh, fun. Well then, the last film to talk about here, you know, there's only 4, but that's fine. We got a little, and most of these ones, I'm glad that you picked these ones, because these feel like they're ones that are not getting reported a lot by a lot of the mainstream reviewers, you know? But this last one is called 9 Days. Now, this is interesting too, because this was also shot in Utah, in this case. And it actually has a pretty high-profile cast. We got Winston Duke in this, Zazie Beetz, Benedict Wong, Bill Skarsgård, Tony Hale is in this as well. Yeah, seems like a pretty tight little Utah production here with a good cast. And it's apparently, I think, is it correct, this is a sci-fi film?
Yeah, well, not necessarily. I mean, it does have, like, some sci-fi elements to it, because you got kind of this unearthly, earthly-type place that is kind of unknown to us. Well, it starts out, let me explain, I guess, who these people are. I mean, Winston Duke...
Yeah, why don't you give us a gist of the synopsis and characters and stuff.
Winston Duke, it starts out with him as well. He is a character that is part of this, I guess you could say, a heaven, what they describe as heaven. He is contracted by the, like, ultimate being, but you never get to see who this boss is, who his boss is of, like,
ruler of the nice way to address spirituality without naming one specific religion or spiritual theory.
Yeah, and so, like, this omnipresent being that we don't know who it is, but Will answers to this being, and we don't really get to see that interaction, but we just know that Will is watching over these multiple TV screens, different people that are living on Earth. And he's kind of in charge and making notes about each one of them, how they're doing. And you kind of don't know why this is. But then as the movie unravels, you see that the reason why this happens is because he and multiple other individuals in this world are in charge of certain beings that are on Earth. And his job is to actually interview, if one of these people that he's in charge with dies, then he's in charge of hiring somebody else to be born on Earth to take up their place. So then all these people just come knocking at his door when one of the beings dies, and he kind of interviews them, and that's where Bill Skarsgård's character comes in. He's the more pessimistic interviewer, interviewee. And then you have Tony Hale, who's more of a comedic type. You have
Tony Hale playing a comedic type? That never happens.
I know, right? It's like, you gotta exploit the comedic range for sure.
So he's just Tony Hale trademarked this.
Though. Yeah, Tony Hale as Tony Hale. And then you got Sassy Beats, and her character's name's Emma, and Emma kind of shakes the things around because she starts to question him as, why is he allowed to be judgmental of the people? Why does he get to call the shots? Where does he come from? Was he ever alive? So now you get to, like, see, oh, wait, Will, who is he now? Like, why is he in this position? And so that's kind of where the movie takes off. You kind of are wanting to know, why is Will in this position? And then you find out that, well, he used to be human. And then...
Well, let's not spoil too much of the plot then, so...
Well, so basically it's kind of like these different sci-fi elements along with philosophical elements of, like, why are we here? Like, who gets to survive the world that we live in better? Because
it almost sounds like an episode of The Good Place, the way that you describe it.
Yeah, it's The Good Place, but more solemn and, I guess you could say, dark in a way.
Okay. Yeah, but one thing I found interesting, you know, I say that a lot of mainstream stuff isn't covering this. Out of all the films we're talking about here, this one actually did win a prize at Sundance. It won the Screenplay Award.
Oh, yeah.
Would you say that was pretty deserved?
I would say so. I mean, the director talked a little bit about the film after the screening, and he said that this was inspired on his uncle. And his uncle had a lot of mental health illnesses. And this was kind of like a, I guess, more abstract look into what his uncle was dealing with depression and finally suicide, and how he saw the world around him.
Aww.
So, yeah, well, that's
a downer, but I mean,
yeah, it's a very personal story. I mean, as I finished watching the movie, I felt a sense of, like, reverence in a way.
Wow. So then, I mean, yeah, we would just say that, like, I don't know. Just tell me, what else do you think really worked about this movie? Like the cast, the directing, the anything else? Like, what do you think really stood out for you?
Well, they shot, yes, they shot throughout Utah, but a thing that was very striking was the Great Salt Lake, how they were able to place a house in the middle of the Great Salt Lake. That's the setting for this other world that Will...
Well, the Great Salt Lake is pretty ethereal looking by itself, so that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's like you just have some random house in the middle of it all, and the house is strikingly bright, and it's strikingly, like, organized. And everything about it is so, like, oh, there's no dirty plate in his kitchen or anything out of the order. So it just kind of, like, shows his character and where he's been at throughout this whole time. But when Sassy Beats comes in, like, you start to notice all these different things in the production design where things get a little messy. And things get, like, a little bit of, like, Will starts to not be so in the order of things, I guess you could say.
Okay, okay. And you say that pretty much most of the cast is pretty good, too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like, in terms of Winston Duke and Sassy Beats, I feel like this was probably one of their most powerful performances for both of them, from what I've been able to see in the past. Because, I mean, they've done mostly, you know, these commercial films, like, with, like, Marvel and, like, Winston Duke.
Yeah, two Marvel actors in the headlining roles.
Here, I know. So. Well, yeah, Benedict Wong, too, you know? I mean, for all these guys, I think this really showed, like, what they could do more than just... you know, these commercialized characters. Like, these are more of complex characters that they have here in this movie.
No, fair enough. And it's interesting, we're talking about the director here. Well, he also wrote the script, Edson Oda. This is his feature film debut. He's only done shorts before this. So, I mean, was that pretty obvious? Or do you feel like he could really tackle feature films like this?
Well, what's funny is I actually saw him direct on set because I was one of the extras for this film.
What?
Yeah, so I was part of the violin recital scene, and I actually saw myself a little bit, like a little blurb, I guess, but I was there. But
isn't it fun to watch yourself on screen? It's just great.
I know, right? But it's weird, but at the same time, it's awesome, too. But I did see him direct on set, and it was just really interesting because out of everybody that was there in the crew, he seemed like the youngest. He seems like he's kind of been, like, and I could tell that he, you know, he was still very much in his element, but at the same time also kind of asking questions and kind of being more of, like, learning. But I feel like the movie, how it turned out, shows a very strong sense of style. Because this is very original. Just the story, not only in screenwriting, but also with the fact that this world that he created and these characters, I have not seen them on screen before. Yeah.
Awesome. No, I'm not familiar with this kind of stuff at all either, but I mean, I always like films that deal with philosophical, spiritual topics, because I feel like people are very shy to talk about that stuff, because it's like, oh, we don't want to offend anybody with the wrong ideas, but then you get the opposite problem where if it's too vague and unrelatable, then it's like, okay, it's just a bunch of philosophical nonsense. But I always like when someone can find a good middle ground. And it seems like, from what you're saying, that he seems to find a good enough approach that it's, like, spiritual without being, like averting towards non-religious audiences or any kind of non-spiritual thinking audiences kind of thing.
Yeah, because it's like... you don't, like we talked about, you don't get a specific religion or anything, but you do get the fact that, you know, whatever it is that you believe in, whether it's a being or universe or whatever it is, that, you know, you start to feel that there are different elements that you could take that come into play. I could take stuff from my own religion and place it in this movie, and somebody else with a different religion can definitely place it in this movie and resonate with them. So
awesome. No, that's really cool to hear. I mean, even just looking at his photos here on IMDb, he does seem really young. So, I mean, that's good to hear. It's nice to see, you know, new talent be discovered. But The only downside is I don't think this film's been acquired yet for distribution. So,
well, I can
hopefully see, someone sees it.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why it wouldn't, just because it's not the most, I guess, commercial, large released film. But I mean, you hope that with the cast that is attached to this, that they could actually do that, you know? Because these are pretty mainstream actors, but they're definitely not doing mainstream acting in this movie, so.
Yeah, and it would be nice to see, like, you know, other sides of people, because even, Winston Duke had a big, you know, couple years with Black Panther and the Avengers movies, and then Zazie Beetz was big off of Deadpool and Joker, and all these other supporting actors, too. It's like, they could really make, you know, if anything, show these actors have a lot more range to get them cast in other bigger parts, too. It's like, yeah, these guys can do more than just be those kinds of characters, you know?
Yeah. So.
That's a shame, but hopefully someone picks it up soon or someone takes a look at this. So, any like possible drawbacks or minor squibbles with the film before we move on?
I would say it's definitely not the kind of film for everybody. I feel like it was for me for the reasons that I said, but I feel like I can see why other people would feel that this was probably not a film for them, in the sense that they felt that, you know, sometimes we could get a little bit of too much information going on, too much exposition, and not a lot of, like, complexity of the character and what they're dealing with.
So it's a lot of, like, talking, a lot of world-building kind of stuff?
Yeah, because now there's so many questions since the beginning to be answered, and I think that's maybe, like, the weak point of this movie. Is that maybe some people will be left with more questions than answers. So.
Yeah, fair enough. But one thing that is kind of promising, this is actually one of the high-reviewed ones of the movies we've talked about, Tomatoes, is at 81% so far. And, I mean, that's also because more people have seen this film than some of the other films. So that's at least promising that overall the people have seen it, you know, it's not overwhelmingly glowing praise, but mostly pretty positive praise across the board from people who saw it.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's definitely one of the most original of the movies that I've seen. I think it's definitely got a lot of potential. Like I said, wonderful performances, wonderful themes that are here to explore. I mean, you could definitely pick and choose which themes you can like explore from this. There's so much to unravel here. So
awesome. Well then, what would you say is your arbitrary rating for this one?
Okay. I would say, let's see. I would say we get 9 TV sets out of 10.
would someone need to watch TV in heaven?
I mean, I hope we get some TV up there.
Yeah, there's not enough to watch in one lifetime. Why don't we watch it in the eternities? Just saying.
I mean, I know, right? So many films, so many TV shows already.
Oh, fun. All right. Well, I think that's the major ones. Now, I know you did say you saw one other film that we actually did record a review for, and it'll be up probably when this recording goes up, for Miss Americana.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Miss Americana, I'll just talk briefly since you guys already...
Yeah.
But I felt like, you know, it was a really interesting look into Taylor Swift's life. I mean, I thought I already knew everything there was to know about her, considering that she has all those songs about all her boyfriends and all this other stuff. But apparently not. I mean, I know that she does love her cats. Cats were very prominent in the film. Just very interesting look into, you know, where her beginnings were. Like, that we can relate to the fact that she started out as a girl with dreams, just like any one of us. And this film was actually one of the most sought-after tickets at Sundance.
It's already been a huge hit for Netflix since it debuted on there too. Like, one of the guys who reviewed it with Max, he went to a theater, and apparently on that first day that he saw it, it was packed even before its official Netflix release. Like, just literally everyone came in droves to watch this movie.
Oh yeah, and scalpers, I feel like, were selling the tickets for Sundance like before Netflix release, $200 each. I feel like is how high it went. I mean, these tickets for Sundance are only $25 each, so
You must be a big Taylor Swift fan if anybody wants to go see this stuff for $200 a piece.
Oh, there were people online. I saw them. They were asking for it. They're like, name your price. I'll take it. Even though they knew that this was going to be released on Netflix, but I guess they just really wanted to go to the premiere because Taylor Swift was going to be there. So.
That's why. So, no, fair enough. Did you enjoy it? Did you not?
I gotta say, I enjoyed it more than I thought I was gonna enjoy it. I mean, it did show, like, a bit of a quirky, more, like, down-to-earth side of Taylor Swift, because I never really had a positive image of her. But,
yeah, fair enough.
But I feel like it was a nice look into that side of her where, you know, she's, like, a dreamer, she's just like you and me, like the girl next door. She shows more of a, I guess, conviction on the things she holds true throughout the movie. So, I mean, but I wouldn't put it like as high as like 8. I would give this like maybe 7 microphones out of 10.
Fair enough. So it'll be interesting to see how any of the other films start to get distributions, because, you know, like I said, I don't know how many of the actual winners got acquired. I know the 40-year-old version did, because that one won for Best Directing at Sundance.
Oh, yeah. I heard that movie was huge. I mean, this lady, she's a 40-something director that comes into the Sundance Labs with all these 20-somethings. And she creates this script where she also acts in about a 40-year-old rapper that wants to follow her dreams.
Fair enough. But then I know a few of the other ones. I think the big film that won this year was Minari, correct?
Yeah, Minari was the big one there. I'm not too familiar with that one, actually.
Me neither. I barely heard anything about that. Like, I knew it won and it was a big deal, but I hadn't really heard anyone really talk about it.
Yeah, even though it did win Audience Award, I feel like. But I just haven't heard much traction online or anything.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Again, I see the problem with Sundance is that even though Sundance films can be popular and can be good or something like that, it just seems like there's a bit of a, you know, diminishing returns. Because I know Amazon had that big acquisition year where they bought a bunch of films from the last Sundance, and almost all of them flopped, apparently. So it's just like, who knows what'll happen for... I mean, and it's the shame that that shouldn't punish these other films, but sometimes it does. Because, yeah, even Minari... I'm looking right now. I don't think it's been acquired yet by any studios. So that's a bummer.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a shame. And some of these like stories that I've mentioned, they're very personal. They've done it from the heart. And a lot of work was put into these. So yeah.
Oh, well. So we'll see what happens. But
yeah.
No, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. Otherwise, I know, not to end on that depressing note, to say at least we got to talk about a few films and give a little spotlight to them. So that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nice thing about these type of mediums is that we get to discuss stuff that not a lot of people know about. So thank you for having me here.
No, you're welcome. Before we just officially stop recording, is there anywhere that the people out in the audience can find you on the internet or anything else that you want to promote?
So everybody can find me on Instagram for more updates on my projects. I have a big project coming up. Like I said, we're working on a short film that I did over the summer that we're doing in post, and we're hoping to get out there for film festivals, hopefully the major ones. So my Instagram is very simple, Movie Mel. You can find me at Movie Mel, and you'll find more updates on that movie and some other things that I'm doing now. So,
yeah, no, I'm very excited. I've been hearing some of the stuff about your meetings, and I really hope the best for you for that stuff.
Yeah, so. No, thank you. And yeah, it's definitely the movie that I'm working on. It's definitely personal to me. It's about an undocumented Latina that explores the world of Latin ballroom dancing and does it despite her mom's wishes and the status in the country, because it just gives her the inner strength that she needs to kind of face these challenges. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, we will make sure to keep an eye out for that. But thank you. And thank you all for listening out there in the podcast land. We will talk to you later. See ya.
All right. Thank you. We'll see ya.